You're listening to The Point. The Cape Cod National Seashore comprises over 43,000 acres and more than 40 miles of seashore along the Outer Cape. Its beauty and ecological diversity is a draw for residents and visitors throughout the year. Following the retirement of George Price, Brian Karlstrom was chosen as the new superintendent of the National Seashore and started the post this spring. Welcome. Nice to see you.
It's good to be here, Mindy.
Yeah, so you've worked at various capacities at the National Park Service over the past few decades. So what drew you to the National Seashore? And just tell us a little bit about where you've been.
Sure, yeah. The diversity of the National Seashore is amazing. You know, the natural resources, the cultural resources, the way that the towns are integrated into the management of the seashore is just really compelling and something that's kind of been a continuum throughout my career. And it just was very intriguing when the opportunity came up. Came available to apply for it, I jumped at the chance, and things worked out, and now I'm here.
So you're not new, you're new to Cape Cod, but you're not new to the National Park Service, so you're, what, 30 years now with the
service?
Yeah,
30 years with the National Park Service.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing
career. Where have you been?
Career.
Everywhere?
I have. I have worked across the country in a number of capacities. About half of my career, maybe a little more, has been in parks, principally around the Washington, D.C. area, but also down in Florida. I was the superintendent of Biscayne National Park, deputy superintendent at C&O Canal National Historical Park, right outside of Washington, D.C. A lot of experience as a GIS analyst, working on planning projects across the country, based out of Denver. Also experience in the Intermountain Regional Office as their senior GIS analyst for a few years. And that was basically the Intermountain Parks throughout the Rocky Mountain West. And then unique experience as a congressional fellow for the National Park Service for 2 years. So I worked for the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. And then most recently was also in Washington as a Deputy Associate Director for Natural Resources, Stewardship and Science, working on climate change, environmental quality, and a lot of policy efforts across the entire system.
Yeah. So you can say you've been around. Yeah.
I have. It's been a lot of fun. I started as a laborer. So I've really, my career's been very unique, and I've spanned the gamut of experiences, and it's been a lot of fun. It's all helped to lead me here.
All that experience you're bringing here. So I'm sure there are a number of items on your to-do list for the National Seashore, and we'll get to those. But before we do, what's your long-term vision for the National Seashore?
Long-term vision for the National Seashore. Well, my predecessor, George Price, did an amazing job of helping set the seashore on a pretty strong course going forward with the rebuild and retreat strategy with the ongoing erosion and the continuing advancement of that rate. I think the storms back in March really showed us how powerful the ocean can be yet again. Mm-hmm. That's a trend that's likely to continue. So we're going to keep looking at opportunities where we can have our facilities be as resilient as possible, with the mind that we're going to have a continuing intensity of storms to contend with so that we can keep the visitor access similar to what it currently is, but to build the facilities that support it in ways that are very adaptable.
Yeah. I want to talk about rebuild and retreat because people might go, what does that mean? And I think Herring Cove is probably a perfect example of that. Anybody who's been there knows how that parking lot, it's right on the beach there. And so in that case, it would be taking that asphalt out, returning that to a natural state, right? And building, putting the parking lot a little bit farther back. Is that how rebuild and retreat works?
That is exactly right, and that is happening and will be happening at Herring Cove in the north parking lot this fall. It is under design right now. Just last week, the vault toilet in the north end of the of the parking lot was removed, so that's no longer there. So that's happening right now, and that's an excellent example. Another one is the Nauset Beach. The stairs there have been removed permanently, but the access has still been retained. It's different now. It's a trail. Gravel hardened surface trail that leads right down to the seashore to the beach. It takes advantage of some of the natural contours that were just to the south of the parking lot.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. National Seashore spans six Cape towns. When the seashore was created in 1961, there was a statutory provision for the advisory commission comprised of representatives from each of the towns and the state. The advisory commission was not not allowed to meet for a period of time. Even though there is a meeting scheduled for June, the commission comes up for reauthorization by Congress in the fall. So what are your thoughts about the role and the future of the Advisory Commission?
The Advisory Commission has played a critical role for the seashore throughout its entire history. It's, as you stated, is a legislated way for the seashore to integrate and interact with the towns. Regardless of what happens with the commission, I'll continue interacting with the towns on a regular basis. I'm working to schedule meetings with town managers now. Met several of the selectmen from different towns at reception that was held for me last week. I'm just looking forward to getting to know the communities and interacting with them. The character of the towns is helps to define and is an integrated part of the seashore. And that's going to continue regardless of what the ultimate fate of the commission ends up being.
Yeah.
I understand. I believe some legislation has been introduced to renew the commission. I think that was dropped last week. But again, that's in Congress's hands at this point. Yeah. And we do have a meeting that we're working to schedule in mid-June.
And as it says, advisory commission, their role is pretty much advisory. But there is six commercial permits that are sort of grandfathered in that were there before the seashore was.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come up, whatever, 5 or 10 years, how often they come up, the advisory commission does kind of make a case for or against renewing those licenses,
yes,
right?
And, you know, that'll be a... Without the commission, it'll be a new business model that we'll have to define on how we seek that advice.
All right. So climate change and coastal erosion are serious issues for
Very
coastal
serious.
Communities. And at the National Seashore, beach access, parking lots, and other infrastructure are being impacted as we've been talking about erosion. So as we look to the future of continued coastal erosion, how can you best prepare for that? And, you know, sea level rise and, you know, all of the things that we're looking for down the line.
Well, the best way to prepare for that is to develop proactive strategies. And Herring Cove, that we already discussed a little bit, is an excellent example of that. We'll continue to work with our planning staff to determine what are the best strategies moving forward. We know the rates of erosion. We have a lot of science that supports how we should be making our decisions. That's part of what we're required to do, is to take into account the science that we have available to us and base our decisions on that. You know, the average rate of erosion is 3 feet. It's highly variable in some areas related to specific storm events. It can be quite a bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we experienced over 40 feet of erosion in Orleans this year, and Chatham. Up at Marconi, it's 15 feet a year, and it's growing in other areas. It's the most dynamic morphological feature on the planet. So the change is there. It's constant. It's been happening over the course of our lifetimes, and it will continue on into the future. Just need to be proactive towards it and account for it.
And we're talking about Herring Cove and like moving that parking lot back. And I'm wondering, you know, that people, even when change is good, sometimes people don't like change. And I'm wondering, you know, if you're getting but I like parking right there next to the water, you know, and I'm sure you're going to get some pushback on some of these projects from people who just don't like change no matter what it is.
We will. And change is what makes it so interesting, though. You know, a lot of times folks that have had a set visitation pattern, when you explain to them why the decisions are being made, they're more informed about it. They may not necessarily agree with it, but at least they understand the reasoning behind it. And we'll continue to do a lot of outreach with the community so they better understand why we're managing the way we are.
Yeah. We're talking with a new superintendent of the National Seashore, Brian Carlstrom. If you have a question or a comment, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So National Park Service has put off maintenance projects throughout the park system because it doesn't have the money or means to cover it. Some estimates that this deferred maintenance is at $12 billion. How is that impacting National Seashore and future maintenance?
It's something that's been impacting the maintenance program for the duration of my 30 years in the Park Service. And we are making headway where we can. I'll give you a couple examples of projects that are occurring. We've touched on two already. Excuse me. Principally, we're prioritize our deferred maintenance to the areas that have the highest need and will have the greatest visitor benefit. So the Herring Cove parking lot is one. The Nauset Beach stairs have been removed. We're repairing the Marconi Beach stairs. We are working on, in a partnership, we're going to be rehabbing the Highland Light in Truro. That's a $1.2 million project that's going to be happening this fall after the visitation season. We've got around $45 million in deferred maintenance at the seashore. And basically, what we've got to do in order to reduce that is make sure we're maintaining the envelopes of our buildings. Spend a lot of time and attention working on the roofing systems, working on the foundations. You got to remember, in order to have an adequate maintenance function, you've got to be in a preventative maintenance mode in order to reduce that amount of deferred maintenance that's occurring. So we're spending a lot of attention, work, and time working on trying to address the things that are going to have the greatest impact to sustain our structures.
Yeah. So do the fees that people pay for the National Parks Seashore, do they go directly to the National Seashore, or does that go into a larger National Park Service budget?
Yes.
Both?
To both.
To both.
Okay. It principally, 80% of it goes back to the park directly, and 20% goes into a fund that gets distributed to parks that do not collect fees, which is the vast majority of sites across the system. There's 419 units, and over 300 of those don't collect fees of any type.
That's interesting. Yes. All right, let's talk about Truro for a second. There's a lot of controversy over what was called the Klein House, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's a kind of McMansion, I guess. And Truro is one of the towns that doesn't have the zoning that could possibly prevent that from maybe entering the seashore. Are there concerns about McMansions going up into the seashore areas?
You know, we do have concerns with trying to maintain the character of the view sheds throughout the park. We'll work with the towns as best we can to try and maintain those. That's a critical part of the character-defining features within the park are those expansive view sheds that we have. And the legislation states that we're supposed to be trying to maintain that back to the time when it was created and where we have those major changes in zoning or building codes. We want to try and work with the towns to try and maintain that as much as possible. There's ways to design specific sites or recommend them, you know, breaking things up instead of having one major structure, having low profiles, a lot of different design solutions that can be suggested.
Yeah. Some wildlife management practices at the National Seashore have come under fire in the past. One was the hunting of coyotes, the other shooting of crows, eliminating one species to protect another. And it's a really kind of a fine line that, you know, no matter what you do, somebody's going to be mad at you. So So what are the factors you consider when managing wildlife in the park?
Well, we manage very specifically towards threatened and endangered species as defined and work closely with the Fish and Wildlife Service in the state to manage four specific species in general. The Park Service and the Seashore try to manage at an ecosystem level. So we address the specific species issues as they come up and try to maintain plans that are put in place by the Fish and Wildlife Service for species recovery when it comes to threatened and endangered.
Mm-hmm. Earlier in the hour, we were discussing groundwater contamination, and there have been concerns about the National Park Service using herbicides and pesticides near freshwater ponds within the park. How does the Park Service assess the impact of herbicides and pesticides on groundwater?
That's a great question. We have an entire program on integrated pest management, and our practice is to use the lowest level of chemicals as possible, and where we may have an instance of potential groundwater contamination, we do monitoring to determine what the extent of it is. Mm. I'm not aware of any specific examples on the seashore yet. Yeah. I haven't been on the job quite a month, but
still learning. Yeah.
I've just got a lot to learn.
866-999-4626 is our number if you have a question for the new superintendent of the National Seashore. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So kind of going back to thinking about the question about, a building. Is there private property within the park boundaries? There is some, right?
Yes, there is. It's a real patchwork of private property and what the park holds in fee title. Mm-hmm. So we work very closely with all the towns when specific issues comes up with various parcels and also with the private property owners.
Is that unusual to have that kind of a situation?
It's not as unusual as you would think. A lot of parks have private parcels within them. Many of the newer parks have, skeleton key kind of boundaries and a patchwork of fee simple lands and private lands and different easements. So it's not that uncommon.
Yeah. Last fall, the National Park Service released results from a survey that found nearly 40% of National Park Service employees reported experiencing some form of harassment over a 12-month period. The survey assessed sexual harassment, hostile work environment, and gender discrimination in the park's monuments and recreation areas. About 50% of the Park Service's permanent employees responded to the survey. A second survey aimed at seasonal employees and is still in the works. So your thoughts on you know, were those surprising results to you? And
Yeah, the harassment issue within the Park Service is something I take very seriously. Over the course of my career, unfortunately, I've witnessed it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. I've tried to manage it. It's something that, as a culture, we need to really work on and address and improve the overall way that's managed and handled.
So it's not just the Park Service.
And it's not just the Park Service. That's correct. You know, we've got some new policies that have just put into place. I'm going to training next week with all my managers throughout the Northeast and National Capital Regions to learn more about that and the new roles that I've got as a superintendent regarding that. Tolerance for it is zero, as far as I'm concerned. My own personal track record, I've resolved a lot of things and try to keep it at the lowest level possible and just maintain a high level of employee morale. You know, invariably they will come up. Incidents do happen. But the important thing is that you're willing to listen to those that are affected and to resolve the issues as quickly as possible and keep open lines of communication. Yeah. It's like we have a question.
Yeah. Ben from Orleans is giving us a call. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Good. First of all, I want to commend Mr. Carlstrom for knowing as much as he does about the issues on the Cape, giving you short tenure. It's amazing how much you already know, Mr. Carlson, and I love that.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, I wanted to just correct one statement that was made, which is that Truro does, in fact, have a zoning bylaw that limits house size on the National Seashore.
Oh, it does.
The limits are roughly around 3,200 square feet for a home, you know, with some very small increases based on lot size. So it really keeps the homes below 3,000 to 4,000 square feet. What they're struggling with now is just to try to adopt a bylaw that spreads that throughout the non-seashore portions of the town, where the client house is. And that was my only point.
But yeah.
My major point is we've been really blessed. I really feel over the last 25 to 30 years having really good superintendents that have been able to balance both the natural and the cultural resources of the Outer Cape, especially in. And I'm hoping Mr. Carlson is able to do that as well. And it sounds like you're off to a really good start.
Yeah. Ben, thanks for that correction. I appreciate that call. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Okay.
Another big project that's happening is the Herring River Restoration Project. You want to mention it? Are you up to speed on that? that's
I'm
a big project. That's
it.
In Wellfleet. Yeah,
I've been out there, walked around it.
It's been in the making for like a couple of decades.
And it will continue to be pursued for a couple more. It's one of those lifelong sort of projects that has, it took over 100 years to get into the condition that it's in. It's going to probably take at least half that to get it, to start to get it back. It's a multi-million dollar estimate to initiate and fully implement the restoration effort. It's a multi-level partnership at the federal, state, local and nonprofit level.
It's really a model, right? It could be used nationally elsewhere. I mean,
it could, and it's benefited from some others that have been implemented in other locations as well. And the idea to restore 1,100 acres of salt marsh is pretty compelling. And correcting I don't want to call it a mistake, but a practice of the past that needs some adjusting so that the ecological services can be restored is important. You know, it's got a lot of impacts for herring fisheries, for other marine organisms, especially the shellfish just below where the impediment is from the road crossing and the undersized tide gate. You know, it's an amazing area right now, but it's vastly impacted by changes in the salinity and encroachment of plants that really don't belong in that area. And
a big project, yeah.
It's a huge project, yeah.
So have you talked to George since you got the job?
Have I talked to George? I've more than talked to George.
Give some tips from George.
The first full day I was in the park, I got the spectacular George Price tour. So it was amazing.
I've gotten the George Price tour, and he's a good tour guide.
He is an exceptional tour guide. 12 years at the seashore and a lot of more. He's been associated with it for most of his life, outside of having been the superintendent for the previous 12 years. Amazing resource. I'll continue to consult with George going forward. He's made that offer. He's very gracious. Learned a lot.
What's on your short-term to-do list?
My short-term to-do list is actually very short. It's three things: listen, learn, and observe. I've been doing that a lot in the first month that I've been here. I will continue to do that through this first full busy season. And then I'll make some conclusions and work with the park staff very closely. We've got an exceptional management team currently in place at the seashore. Many of them are experts in their specific disciplines. And I'm very fortunate to have that group to work with.
Yeah.
So they're really talented, and we'll determine our path together.
Yeah. So what's your biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge? Trying to keep the fire hose of information down to, you know, a garden hose at times. I'm learning as much as I can. There's a lot to learn, and it'll take a little while to get fully up to speed on the full spectrum of issues that are coming at the seashore on a routine basis.
All right. There will be a reception to meet National Seashore Superintendent Brian Karlstrom on Tuesday, May 8th at the Province Lands Visitor Center. We'll have more information about the reception at our website, capeandislands.org. We'd love to have you back sometime in the future here as you get settled in the job and chat more about what's happening at the seashore.
I welcome that opportunity, Mindy. It would be great. I do want to say we are going to have a new park film this summer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Tell us about that.
And that's going to be coming out. It'll be a little bit of a premiere June 1st, and it's the first time we've had a new film since the 1970s.
Wow.
And it's going to be 14 minutes, and it's going to go over the origins of the park from its glacial formation, the first people, the fragility and resilience of the seashore, and the diversity of habitats and species, recreation opportunities, and how the place is so special. It's going to be really I've seen a quick preview of it, and I think people are going to be really happy with it.
So what, is that going to be playing at the Visitor Center?
Where it will.
It? Yeah.
Yeah,
all
it's
right.
A new film for the Visitor Center to get people oriented. And then we've got a new exhibit that just opened 2 weeks ago at the Province Lands Visitor Center as well.
All right. Brian Karlstrom, thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. Good luck.
Thanks.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.